Chuck Grismire. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gift.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Bill Sardi. And we are going to be talking about the Mexican flu or the Mexican swine flu, call it what you will, this exaggerated, blown-up, so-called world pandemic that has killed, you know, millions of people. Well, maybe not millions of people, hundreds of thousands of people, thousands of people. Well, as of the middle of last week, according to the World Health Organization, 241 people had died. It was as of about Thursday of last week. 241 people had died throughout the world. Heavens, we lose 1,000 people every day for DDT, which is a preventable problem. They've just outlawed DDT because it was so effective in saving lives. Probably lose a couple of thousand people every day from the AIDS epidemic. They're lying to us about the incidence of AIDS. It has dramatically dropped the AIDS, say, in Zimbabwe from about 64 to 34 for a male, and certainly in South Africa, dropping the average age of the individuals from 64 down maybe to 54 and even less. Understand that millions of people are dying from unnecessary epidemics throughout the world, and suddenly our attention is focused on the so-called swine flu that threatens the world, and they're actually creating all sorts of vaccines for it. We have put out $1 billion already to give to the vaccine companies to create a vaccine so they can start testing it this summer, so they can give it to us for next fall, because they're afraid this is going to come back with a vengeance and more people are going to die. And ladies and gentlemen, it's as phony as a $3 bill. And that's why I've asked Bill Sardi to come and talk to you about this threat and, of course, the possible consequences of worldwide vaccination with a vaccine that probably won't do a bit of good. Bill Sardi is an investigative journalist, does a great job in health matters, and nobody I prefer talking to this evening on this subject than Bill. Bill, bring us up to date on what's really going on.
Well, according to news reporters in New Zealand, the whooping cough epidemic dwarfs swine flu, and the infection rate there, they have 2,445 cases of pertussis, that is, whooping cough, only 379 cases of the H1N1 swine flu virus, and they reported that the sales of, well, Tamiflu, the anti-flu drug, are 100 times, even 1,000 times larger than the prior year. 74,000 doses sold. And guess what? The health authorities there indicate not one of the vaccines that they have fits any of the 18 strains of that have been out there in the flu. The whole thing, the Tamiflu doesn't work for any of the 18 strains that have been in circulation either, vaccines or Tamiflu, which is a drug. So they're selling Tamiflu 74,000 doses, and not one pharmacist has had the guts to tell the consumers that it doesn't work for their strain. It hasn't shown to be sensitive for that. It is working for many of the cases of the H1N1 swine flu virus you're hearing about, but it's kind of the Keystone Cops, because you run around the planet and you find all these stories and none of them really make any sense. What they're saying, and they're dangling in front of us since 2005 and before that, even with the SARS virus, was that some sort of a influenza virus is going to sweep the globe, and we better hold our breath, because if inevitably one of those 1918-like Spanish flu epidemic is going to hit the globe. And with that dangled out in front of us and great fear created around the planet...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, Bill, go right ahead. With great fear created all across the planet.
Well, they're able to free up $9 billion out of the current administration in Washington to rapidly develop. They've created this scenario acting like it's a repeat of 1918, that the 1918 flu virus kind of came and went late in the season like we see here in North America. And then, and we did have a bad winter here, meaning vitamin D levels would have been low, maybe our immunity would have been low. And that wouldn't explain things in Mexico where we did check the weather patterns, but nonetheless, that's kind of what happened here. And now they're saying it's going to lay low, people get sunshine, that's our interpretation, immune systems go up and then go down, and now we're going to have a mutated virus that's worse than what we just faced. Well, I can tell you tonight that the swine flu is likely in my household. I have the same symptoms of swine flu at the moment. So does my young five-year-old. We're just treating it with vitamin D. The only nasty part of it is because we're actually treating ourselves and know how to do this, is that you do get a kind of a lingering dry cough. And it's going around now. I can tell you friends and people are wondering, is there something going around, because people around me say they have something, and it's probably this unleashed swine flu, which is a combination of a bird and a swine, a pig, and a human virus. Unprecedented. There's never seen anything like this before, and yet the World Health Organization said, oh no, this is a regular common thing. One of the experts around the world, a man who was involved in the development of the Tamiflu drug, questioned and said that the swine flu may be a human error that escaped from a lab. This is a man who's age 75, Adrian Gibbs, and of course helped develop the Tamiflu drug. He proposed that idea to the World Health Organization. They slammed the door on his idea in 2 days, just said it really didn't make any sense, but they didn't give any evidence for it. It makes no sense that all of a sudden a combination of a pig and a bird and a human virus would merge like this, but even more unlikely is they're giving us the nonsense idea that it's because humans live in close proximity to the pigs.
But they've lived in close proximity to pigs for thousands of years.
Thousands of years, and the rationale is that the pigs have moved from, around the world from China to here. That isn't the way it happens. China doesn't have enough pigs. And we grow pigs and then send them to China.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Bill Sardi is talking about the makeup of this so-called swine flu virus, which is basically a North American swine flu influenza, a Asian swine flu influenza, an avian influenza. I don't know what part of the world that comes from. And then a human one, and you don't get this sort of combination just spontaneously, and certainly some people, at least one man, Mr. Adrian Gibbs, who was one of the men who, as a scientist who worked for the development of Tamiflu, suggested maybe this certainly had gotten out of a laboratory. We have laboratories all throughout the world that are making and manufacturing all sorts of new and terrible types of viruses. They went up into the permafrost and they dug up the bodies of the people who died during the great epidemic in 1918, and they isolated those viruses, and they have those viruses at laboratories all over the world. Why didn't they just leave that virus alone? If it should get out of the laboratory, why it could do terrible harm? And we know that these viruses get out of the laboratory because recently Baxter, a pharmaceutical, prepared millions of doses of vaccine, and they sent it to Europe. They were going to be given, this was an influenza vaccine. The Czechoslovakians actually injected this into ferrets. All the ferrets died. They checked the vaccine, and Baxter had accidentally had added a live avian flu influenza vaccine. That's the deadly form of avian flu that killed literally millions of birds throughout the world. They just accidentally inserted that into the influenza vaccine they were going to give to millions of people in Europe. And they said, oh, shucks, we don't know how it happened, just a mistake. Can we really trust the laboratories? You pick up the story, Bill.
You can't make a mistake like this in the laboratories. They're not allowed to mix these kinds of things like this. It had to be intentionally put in. There are certain safety laws. You can read them online, what precautions they take. And, of course, this is kind of lots of mistakes in the stories we've read about this. What Adrian Gibbs was talking about is listed here in Advances in Virus Research this year and last year. It says the first 80 years of swine flu remained relatively static. That is, there's few mutations and combinations like this. Another article in May of 2002 said 60 years went by before there have been any mutations in these swine viruses. So what happened here with this rapid combination of three? And this is what Mr. Gibbs was saying. Something had to accelerate it like an escape from a laboratory, because it wouldn't explain why we've been going so slowly with mutations. And all of a sudden, we have this rapid development. And there are circumstances here, of course, that are called into play. The president of Mexico, soon after the election of our president here in the United States, came to visit the White House. And then subsequently in early April, the president of the United States visits Mexico. And then within days of returning to the United States, the outbreak occurs. And in the middle of that, a major vaccine company announces that they have a vaccine for the very type of flu that we're talking about. I mean... Is this all just coincidence?
And it's never been seen before, so that was just a pretty fortuitous, wasn't it?
It was very fortuitous. And then, Sarkozy, this fellow over there in France who runs the operation over there, happened to visit Mexico at about the same time and announced that France was establishing a vaccine plant in Mexico City. Now, isn't this cute? The alignment of planets is unreal in this whole game, as everybody's in it for money. And so you understand, there's been $9 billion freed up for research to develop rapidly, right now, enough vaccine to treat the world. And now we say treat the world. Come on, we've got 6 billion people on the planet. What they want to do is make 600 million shots available as fast as they can. It would overwhelm United States flu clinics, as they're trying to say, Centers for Disease Control. It's going to require two injections 3 weeks apart for the swine flu, and then another one for the seasonal flu. Everybody is going to get three shots, and then children younger than 9 years old are going to get four shots. Why the four shots for the little kids? Well, it's been proven that one shot doesn't work now. You mean all these years we've been getting the one shot? Yep. They just showed it in kids, 27% effectiveness of the flu vaccine. All these years, they've known some of this. They haven't told us. They're just shooting us up with this stuff. And, of course, now they're going to do all this whole thing. And, of course, it could overwhelm the whole story. And U.S. considers massive swine flu vaccination program, 600 million doses of it. Well, that means no single company can make a vaccine. This means many different vaccines being used. If there's a contaminated batch, this is going to be difficult to follow. You're going to have different products out there. It could dwarf the 115 million cases of seasonal flu vaccine that's normally made. And how you're going to actually handle this, it's a widespread vaccination program that requires some sort of mandate. Now, understand, the 600 million doses is just to vaccinate about 150 million people, or maybe 200 million because of the 3- and 4-dose requirement. But understand that isn't all of the United States population. We have never vaccinated more than about 100 million or so out of our population of 300 million. we skip the other 200 million, do we ever have a pandemic? Is there ever a massive death here? No. And, of course, they keep repeating this 36,000 figure that's often quoted, 36,000 Americans die of the flu every year, and that's really a number we think it looks like somewhere between 3 and 5,000. It's hard to tell because they lump in pneumonia with the flu, and we know that older people, their immune system goes down, they die of the pneumonia. So they hide those two figures and meld them together. You really can't tell. But it doesn't look like it's much more than 5 or 6,000. And that number is even questionable because you have to look at people that are immune compromised. If they get sick or in the hospital, they may be getting it, and this may be part of the whole thing. So among the population at large, unlikely. And so, and you're seeing now, it looks like some sort of weaponized, designed virus swamp the United States being circulated around. And it's around. I can tell you it's probably here in our household. You can tell. If you have a cold, you've got a runny nose for sure and a head cold, this kind of a thing. The flu could have a little bit of fever for a time. You could have slightly runny nose and so on. The differentiating factor is this dry cough that lingers for 2 or 3 weeks. And you really need a lot of vitamin D for this. Don't be afraid there. And take some vitamin C. Selenium's important because if it ever gets to your lungs, it limits the damage. And a little bit of zinc. These are the first four on the list. There's so many others, elderberry syrup and so on, found to be helpful. But, you need to be prepared here a little bit because there looks like they're just somehow man is inventing these things. And, the virologists have been hoping that the viruses, help them out a little bit. So that the mutations would occur. Gee, just somehow, after laying around for 60 to 80 years, these swine flu viruses just started cooperating with the virologists so that they could get all their weaponized systems going, all their vaccine systems going. Understand that virtually every vaccine company, particularly for the flu, is broke. They develop vaccines. Some of them are developmental companies, experimental companies. And then they really work hand in hand with government, and in order to keep the impetus going for this, like phony wars and other things, you have to have the threat of an outbreak. So you release research funds, you develop these things. You've got Tamiflu, millions and millions of doses. I haven't got the figure at hand, but they've got so much Tamiflu out there that hasn't been used. That's the antiviral drug that you give, not a vaccine.
And let me just comment, of course, that was developed by a company that was a man named Donald Rumsfeld was the CEO, and he was the CEO before he went to work as the Secretary of Defense. So Donald Rumsfeld has a big smile on his face because, of course, through the phony idea, we haven't had the stockpile, the Tamiflu they bought, billions of dollars worth of Tamiflu, and Donald Rumsfeld's company has done very, very well.
Well, and they did, Rumsfeld became part of the Defense Department, which then it looks like they used his drug, on military troops, and then there were issues there, too. We do have Tamiflu resistance. It comes from a natural substance. Star anise is the substance. They make this thing in Asia, and the drug is made in circulate around the world. They've got it up to a 7-year shelf life now, and it's selling pretty well. When we originally reported on this 2 or 3 years ago on Radio Liberty, why Tamiflu had not been proven to prevent, it was proven to shorten the course. But now they've done studies, and it does seem to prevent it if you took it. But you're talking about pills at $12 a pill. Some of them can be had online at $6 a pill. They're selling this from overseas websites, so a lot of people acquire this on their own.
But don't you actually have to take the pill before you become ill, if it's going to prevent it?
Well, really, in order to get any kind of effectiveness, you've got to guess when you're going to get it. And you get a 15-day course, but you really might need 45 days. That would be pretty expensive. So these are the kind of things that we're facing. It's really the Keystone Cops as the stories keep changing about all this. And I know a lot of people are concerned. Are they going to force us into vaccination? Well, they can't because they're never going to have enough of the vaccines. Fortunately, I see Sharon Tenpenny here. Sherry Tenpenny, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, has a new book out, How to Legally Say No to All Vaccines. But, you know, if they start forcing our kids in the schools and things, we may have to pull the kids out of school. I certainly would. All of these are going to be unproven vaccines.
Hold that thought, Bill. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Go right ahead.
I want to emphasize something to people that are listening tonight. I may have mentioned this before on the air. We talked about this a couple of years ago, and it may not have.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances? Even things which can cause sickness or disease. If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
The question is, why did they die, and why does the CDC and the other public health authorities never talk about something happened in 1992 and 1993? And the people who primarily died were in nursing homes at that time. Every year we have people in nursing homes. Every year we have a spiral of influenza, and it hits the people in nursing homes. But why did so many more people die in that interval of 92, 93?
Enough you can to start. Erase it from the history books. It's not here as one of them. It was the flu. It was no other cause. And they admit it in their papers. But why would they not include it among the major, the Hong Kong, the Asian, the Russian, the 1918? This was one that since the Spanish flu, it's the only thing that has brought about a setback. Americans keep living longer and longer, but in 1993, that went in reverse. And it took me 2 years later, the other night, as I began searching again, what could have possibly caused this in 1993. Now, I never could tell your audience in 2006 until two nights ago. And I'll read it right from the government's bulletin. Medicare coverage for flu shots for the elderly began in 1993 as the Clinton administration launched an effort to increase immunization rates among older adults. Ladies and gentlemen, did that immunization program end up killing nursing home patients?
I remember there was about 93,000 people in excess
deaths. Almost 93,000 excess deaths. The vast majority were elderly citizens in nursing homes that attributed to this increase in the death rate, over and above normal death rate. See, the question is, this would have devastated their hallowed, their treasured vaccine program. Was there a contaminated vaccine? Did it kill off our elderly patients? That was the first year they had Medicare coverage for flu shots. They obviously did this in the nursing homes. Ladies and gentlemen, would they hide that from us? I can't put all the strings together, but I can put this part together for you. They didn't tell us about the whole setback in life expectancy. It is not listed. I'm listing it for you. It is in the history books. If you want to go dig it up, the hidden history, we had a major flu outbreak in 1993, and it appears to be linked to the Medicare coverage for the flu shots, which began the same year. It's possible we may have had a major contaminated flu batch. Now, understand, contaminated meaning virulent. We use these words loosely, and when they say we have a live flu virus or a attenuated or a killed virus, these are all nonsense. Viruses don't live by themselves. They're proteins. They're genetic material. They have to live inside a host cell, yours. And once they get in there, they can't replicate except for the printing press machinery of your DNA and RNA, and they use your genetic material to make copies. So they don't live by themselves. They're genetic material. There is no such thing as a live virus and a killed virus in that respect. There are ones that they run through and make many, many generations of in other life forms, hoping it'll mutate and then become less virulent, and then they try to find those less virulent strains to give us in the vaccines. But this is all nonsense. Baxter, when they had this live outbreak of a bird flu virus, found in their vaccine batch that they sent to one of their subcontractors. Luckily, the Czech Republic researchers tested it in ferrets. This is the way you pretest for mortality. Flu viruses will kill ferrets very reliably. It's related to human death. So, and then, of course, Baxter put out the bulletin. It was live virus. It's not live. It just means it's able to kill. And you're not supposed to be having any real major can-kill virus out there. You're supposed to be. Now, they tell us that, don't worry, the ones in your vaccine are killed. They're not killed. There's no killing viruses. They just happen to be varieties that are supposed to be less virulent, less damaging. One of the interesting things is 3 or 4 years ago, we were talking about the H5N1 virus, and it would circulate the globe, and how terribly dangerous it was. And the language, as they talked about this, Dr. David Nabarro, who is the head of the United Nations Influenza Response, said, we're dealing here with the world survival issues, or the survival of the world as we know it, he said in 2000. and 5.
And that was, of course, talking about the deadly avian virus, avian flu virus.
That's right.
It was deadly. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill was simply talking about the a few years ago when we were talking about the deadly avian flu virus, and it was deadly. It was deadly to birds and the entire world. I think there are probably 170 people have died of this, of this H5N1 virus. Yes, it was deadly for birds, but it wasn't deadly for human beings. And yet they tried to scare us to death. Remember, day after day, week after week, month after month, we'd hear about, you know, any time this influenza virus is avian influenza virus was going to break loose, was going to get to the point it could be transmitted from person to person, and when that happened, the epidemic would sweep the world, and it would be just like it was back in 1918. That is, incidentally, the same virus that Baxter put into the, just within the last month or two, put in the influenza virus, just regular influenza virus. They put the live bird flu virus into those, and they were going to give it to millions of people in Europe. Thank goodness, of course, somebody found out what they were.
What we need to understand is the H5N1 fizzled like SARS a little bit, too. It is dangerous. It can kill humans. Can. Meaning small numbers, but still the numbers all total could be big. But what happened is, after time, they realized that the H5N1 was not good, very good at transmission from individual to individual. If you got it, it could be serious, but it wasn't good at human transmission, and therefore it didn't meet what they were really looking for, the big one, the big 1918 Spanish flu killer that they were, of course, rousing up so much concern for. Here's a newspaper in the United Arab Emirates. This is no science fiction. Peddled by the likes of Michael Crichton, evidently we're battling a big global killer. That was in 2005. That's the H5N1. U.S. Congress said the United States Senate is voting to try to stop a catastrophe on American shores before it happens. And a Pennsylvania newspaper said, hurrah, when the Congress tried to vote more money for this. Of course, none of this ever happened. And of course, what happened is, now they needed the help of the viruses themselves, and they needed to find the big 1918 scare. It wasn't the H5N1 because it doesn't transmit very well. All of a sudden, it became the H1N1, but only when combined with one of these others, like the H5N1. It's exactly what Baxter was doing. If you combine two of these, you get a genetic mutation.
Hold that. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Bill was simply pointing out that what Baxter did was to take the H1N1, pardon me, which is basically a type, influenza type A or influenza type B, and they made a vaccine for it, and then they accidentally put in the live H5N1, the deadly avian flu virus we were hearing about three or four years ago, and they just accidentally put it into millions of doses, and they were going to give them to all over Europe, and they would have killed. Well, what they would have done is got this virus so it would suddenly acclimatize to human beings, and then it could be perhaps spread readily from person to person. They could have killed millions of people, and when they were found out, they said, "Aw, shucks, we just made a mistake. Well, we're going to withdraw that. We have no idea how it happened. Just a mistake." Ladies and gentlemen, when you are a multi-billion-dollar corporation, you don't make mistakes like that. Pick up the story there, Bill.
In 2002, they said genes derived from human, swine, that's pig, avian, that's bird, viruses have become a major cause of swine influenza. That is, the pigs getting this. That was written in 2002. We had this triple combination back then. It's nothing new. They're trying to tell us it was around a little bit earlier than they found in April in Mexico. Around? Let's try 2002 in the Journal of Virus Research. They document this. This is nothing new. These things have been combining for a while. Somehow, this thing became virulent, and it appears to have been set like a bomb. Because as you went and talked to people that I know that went to visit Mexico, it was only in certain areas and didn't spread from those areas. It was as if it had been planted in certain areas, and then it was in Mexico City and some other areas north and so on. But whole areas of Mexico have only had 4 or 5 cases. I mean, these are major states. And a lot of the information you read has to do with conjecture or estimates, like there are 20-some thousand, I believe, recorded cases, 29,000 or something, where these have been laboratory confirmed in the United States. What did that become? 1 million in the newspapers because, we guess there's 1 million people that have it. Well, I'll tell you, it's going around here in Southern California probably right now, and this is kind of an interesting phenomenon. Now, there is I did send over the weekend to Dr. Stan evidence of a Dr. Robertson in Great Britain, and he has talked about priming populations by intentionally exposing them to viruses to prime them to develop a certain, you know, you get antigens and then you want the immunity from it, so you want to develop natural immunity. Well, you know, that's exactly what we're talking about when we're talking about things like vitamin D, natural immunity, selenium, vitamin C. None of that's ever mentioned by public health authorities because it's not the gravy train. It's not where the research contracts are. It's not where the great big volume of money is as people use the news machinery to scare people into rolling up their sleeves and having these vaccines. About 1/3 of the United States is gullible or vulnerable enough to roll up their sleeves and go for these vaccines, even though we have evidence here, we've been reporting it, that in certain seasons, the vaccines for the flu have done nothing. They made no impact whatsoever on the seasonal flu for years, and they were selling these vaccines. The Centers for Disease Control buys them, sends them out to community health clinics that then administer them, and they were known to be worthless because these flu viruses mutate rapidly, and by the time you put 2 or 3 strains of flu virus in a vaccine and try to think what's going to hit next year, it mutates into some other form, and the vaccine confers very little immunity. And you're subjecting people to just side effects because you're giving a little bit of the disease in these cases. You have to give something that can develop antibodies, an antibody response. That means disease. And that means some people will have side effects, and the immune compromised will die. Now, it's interesting when you look at how they list, what is a killed virus and what is a live virus, and these kind of mushy definitions. And they go on to say that there's problems because in killed viruses, you could have incomplete inactivation and increased risk of allergic reactions. I find that interesting. And it goes on to say these killed viruses shouldn't be given to the immune compromised. What? But, well, those are the very people that need it. So, I mean, this is what they're talking about, that they're safer because they're you know, less problematic, like versus what's called so-called live vaccine or a live virus. The live just means it's more virulent. And it has its own issues, too, and it says shouldn't be given to immune-compromised or pregnant patients. But they're all live in that sense. It's just a matter of degree. And you're going to get a little bit of disease. And then they actually try to spark on the immune response, your production of antibodies, by giving you an adjuvant. And so they put in various things in there. In this case, in some cases, it's been a heavy metal, like mercury. In some cases, it's been the shark oil and so on, various things trying to help us. But isn't that exactly what we're trying to do naturally with vitamin D and vitamin C and so on? And our biggest problem is overreaction of the immune system, which in 1918 seemed to have occurred. It seems like the where there are, is bad nutrition, poor hygiene, like in Mexico, where there is a coexisting disease like tuberculosis, and this is what happened in 1918. Our soldiers came back from war and overseas in World War I. They were young men. They had been exposed to tuberculosis. There were no antibiotics then. And, of course, they were walking around with coughs and TB and then caught the flu that year. Later on, it mutated into a more virulent form. And then many of them died due to their good immune response. Their over-immune response is the immune system literally filled up their lungs with fluid and they drowned. And they couldn't handle this. Well, vitamin D normalizes your immune response. Selenium normalizes your immune response. Quercetin normalizes your immune response. Quercetin found in the skin of red apples and red onions. You can buy it as a dietary supplement. These are the kind of things that you need to use and to be playing around with old-fashioned vaccines. Yes, we had nothing else. Yes, vaccines have lowered disease, but they're terribly fraught with contamination and possibly causing malignancy, that is cancer. And that's exactly what you see here as we have evidence of that in the polio vaccine and it then causing the mesothelioma in the lungs and so on, these other things. So we know the simian 40 virus that came along in the polio vaccine that was hidden in there.
And I would just comment that they've lied to the American people. They've done everything to conceal it, and they knew it was a problem. How do we know that they knew? Why, very simply, there's a book called The Health Century. It was published under the auspices of the National Institute of Health. The book is written by Edward Shorter. You can get it on Amazon. And, of course, basically, they said, we can't let the American people know. They'd lose confidence in us, so we'll conceal the fact that there was this simian 40 cancer virus in the original polio vaccine. But what was even more unconscionable is after they discovered there's this cancer-producing virus in the vaccine, they used up all the supplies, both in the United States and throughout the world, and they contaminated millions more with this cancer virus, which is still there in the population. It's been tracked, it's been found, it's passed from mothers to their children, and the children then are developing cancers thanks to the polio vaccine. It's not the polio vaccine didn't work. It was a wonderful thing. But it was, of course, what came with that, and far more people have died of the cancers than would have died of polio. But they cannot let the American people know the truth. There's a wonderful book, The Virus and the Vaccine, and it goes into Dr. Carboni's book. But to really understand what they were thinking in the National Institute of Health, their publication, The Health Century by Edward Shorter, is a very disturbing book. Because, of course, they even laughed at the fact that they'd used this experimentally in the Russian population to make sure it was safe. And now, of course, they were going to have so many cancers that their athletes wouldn't be able to perform, and they wouldn't certainly be able to compete effectively in the Olympics. And they were laughing. They tell about how they were laughing about it. What sort of human beings are these who are determining the course of our health? Go right ahead.
It was in March 2009, this year, that Nicolas Sarkozy visited Mexico City, announced an agreement with Mexican authorities to build a 100 million euro facility to manufacture influenza vaccine there in Mexico City. In the same day, an article was written by Ron Maloney in a South Texas newspaper, and it talked and announced a rehearsal of a pandemic disaster scheduled for May the 2nd, 2009. This is part of our homeland security defenses. The article says Guadalupe County Emergency Management and their counterparts around the country are preparing for just such a scenario. This means a rehearsal of mass vaccinations. They're already rehearsing this in various health centers around the United States, and we don't even know it. They've been doing this for some time. And so, you know, what is all this that's going on? Why don't we know about it? So apparently this has been going on for some time. within our own country, and this is striking. And all of this information, of course, kept from us. And, you know, we hear things like two children die in Southern California. These are probably children that came here from Mexico, you know, that were in very poor health. And so then we get alarmed. And so these are sad things that are happening. But I'm just trying to say is it may not be the alarm bell that we should be told about. So, you know, Scotland, this tries to get it across the ocean, will begin a four-week exercise to prepare for the flu pandemic. When was that released? April the 20th, 2009. What flu pandemic? This was before the Mexico City thing got to be the real big headline. So, you know, what is going on here? What are they doing on a worldwide scale to prepare for? And now we see all of these hundreds of millions of vaccines going to be produced. And it says, according to the headlines I have here, it looks like this is underway. They're going to declare. You saw the World Health Organization declare a pandemic. A pandemic is not a declaration of severity. It's a declaration of the geographical breadth that it has gone around and hit more geographical territory. So you can see the scare tactics here.
And I think we already have to remember the swine flu epidemic of 1976, where Gerald Ford, wanting to get reelected, declared this was a major epidemic. We had to have massive vaccination programs. Now, one person had died at that point. Only one person had died of the swine flu. And they had this massive vaccination. 25 or 26 people died. There were certainly, I think, 500 cases of Guillain-Barré disease, of paralysis. Eventually, of course, why, of course, nobody else was dying of the flu, we were dying of the vaccine. Why don't we ever talk about that? The swine flu vaccination program that killed so many people in 76, you know, and crippled so many people for life.
We have Forbes magazine writing an article on this, talking about the swine flu campaign could dwarf all prior preparations for the flu. And it says officials have not decided whether to start a flu swine vaccination program. Well, it looks like they've made every plan but for the fall. And it says timing on this depends on how fast the vaccine can be produced and tested. But it says a widespread vaccination campaign is likely, says Associated Press. Well, it's obvious they're pulling the trigger ahead of this thing.
And how do they know what type of influenza epidemic there's going to be this coming fall? And they don't know.
They admit these things mutate anyway, so they may not even have it. Now, they have some current technology with some vaccine companies where within a short period of time they can make little snippets of viruses and then take that snippet and inject you with it. It's not the whole virus, and it confers an immune response and some immunity, but guess what? That's not like you being exposed like I am now with, I think I have a little symptoms of the swine flu, where I'm going to have some conferred immunity for a number of years. This only gives you what's in circulation at that moment, and it doesn't protect you against anything ever after it.
But how can we be absolutely certain there won't be something
exactly
else in there?
But this is exactly what they want. They want a vaccine that you have to keep giving and giving and giving, you see? They're developing these vaccines that sound like they're less troublesome, but, you know, it's kind of like, what was it, the seed company there, Monsanto, making seeds you can only grow once, and then you have to go back to them for the seed again. You can't, you know, generate your own seed to grow, plants again. Well, this is the same thing here. You take a snippet of this virus, and then you use it, but it confers no long-lasting immunity. So you'd be better off getting exposed to something. And then we have this Dr. Robertson in Britain saying we ought to just take massive human populations and prime them to make them healthier. Well, that's a little scary in the hands of somebody. I mean, are they intentionally releasing these things? Understand, maybe an American population with clean water, clean food, Pure Food and Drug Act, we fortify our foods with vitamins. Maybe we'll withstand it. We look pretty healthy. There have only been 263 cases as of today of deaths. The mortality rate is about 0.4%. The Spanish flu is about 2.5 to 5%. 2.5 to 5 out of 100 died. So, the issue is that the mortality rate's low. But the question is here is that what we're being told is all contrived as they unleash this. Are we going to see more side effects than we see the actual disease? Is the actual disease going to come from the actual vaccine? Because understand, you're going to shed viral particles if you get it, and then your friends and relatives are going to get this. Now, and I will say one thing. There is evidence that in sunnier climates, the vaccines don't work as well.
And, of course, the important thing would be for people to have vitamin D and other products.
It is, but vitamin D, there's a warning out from the Vitamin D Council that vitamin D may somehow interfere with the vaccine. So, and they maybe misuse this. Understand, you need vitamin D, an essential vitamin, long before you need any artificial vaccine.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, Bill.
Understand, in the year 2005, the entire market for vaccines was $9 billion in sales. The administration in Washington has unleashed...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a 1-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 316 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
To keep idle minds busy, we're going to be moving into a period of chaos. More and more people are going to lose their jobs and their homes, and certainly there's going to be social unrest later this year and next year. And what a wonderful mechanism to sidetrack people's attention from their suffering We have now a new threat. It's not Osama bin Laden. No, it's not the communist. It's the deadly swine flu. Anyway, Bill, God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us. We've got to do it again sometime real soon.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we do want to remind you, we do have a number of tape sets and books on this. We carry a book by Neil Mellor called Are Vaccines Safe and Effective? Well, let me tell you that we no longer have the measles epidemics we used to, but by the time they introduced the measles vaccine, they had the death rate down to, I think, about 30 a year before they started the measles epidemic, and the same thing with the diphtheria and the tetanus. And you go to my website at radioliberty.com, you can actually read the government figures. We have them there. Radioliberty.com, read the letters and go down to those on vaccines. You'll be amazed to find out that most of what you think about vaccines are not true. Yes, they have certainly saved lives. There's no question. What eradication of polio and of smallpox were amazing things. But the introduction of a cancer virus into our population that kills millions of people is unconscionable, and the fact that they're concealing that fact is unconscionable as well. You need to get the book, Vaccines, Are They Safe and Effective? Or if you want the very, very large book, of course, it's The Vaccine Safety Manual by Neil Mellor. And we also carry another little book he put out called Autism. They are basically the federal hearings, Senate hearings on the relationship between vaccination and autism that were suppressed by the media. If you'd like to read the Southwood report, this was the suppressed CDC report. You wonder why the CDC would have top secret reports. It was top secret because they didn't want the parents of America to know that they knew there was a relationship between the mercury-containing childhood vaccines and, of course, the epidemic of autism. Let me point out today that between 1 in 100 and 1 in 150 children in America now has autism. 1 in every 6 children has a neurodevelopmental abnormality. 1 in every 9 children has asthma. Skyrocketing incidence of diabetes. I think certainly about 1 in every 40 children has juvenile diabetes. Allergies are in increase, autoimmune disease are in increase, all representing the reflection of what happens when you prime the immune system for the use of vaccines. On the other hand, you just don't see these problems in the Amish children who do not take vaccines. We're introducing these terrible vaccines to Africa, and of course they do have a side effect. We're leaving the mercury in there. We've taken it out of the childhood vaccines in the United States, but not out of influenza and other vaccines. But we've taken out of childhood vaccines in America. We've left it into the children in Africa because it'll destroy their fertility and their minds, and they know what they're doing. That's what's so unconscionable. The Southwood report, which is available from Radio Liberty with the other things we've mentioned, is readily available. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We have a great four-tape set. It's Vaccine Update 2009. That's a 4-CD set. Vaccine Update 2009. We have a great DVD from Dr. Blaylock of Vaccines and Brain Development, and of course Dr. Ayoub's classic Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda. Mercury Autism and the Global Population Agenda comes with a CD-ROM with literally thousands of scientific studies on, of course, what happens when, of course, you give mercury to children. They know what's happening. They're destroying the lives of our children. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I'm going to ask my producer, to, of course, to get our next guest on the line, Brad Friedman, and we're going to be talking about voting in the United States. And I think this is an important subject. We hear a lot about the voting programs over in Iran. But if John is there, please, John, please get our guest for us. We'd like to have Brad up on the line. But basically, it's been said that they had dishonest voting over in Iran, and I don't know whether the voting was correct or not. I do know that the polls that were taken 2 weeks before the recent Iranian election showed that President Ahmadinejad was going to get twice as many votes as his nearest competitor. In other words, he, I think, was going to get something like 32-33% of the vote, and his closest competitor was going to get about 14%. You can find the article up on the Internet. Simply Google in. It was a Washington Post article. 2 weeks ahead of time, and the Ahmadinejad to win the election. So it was anticipated Ahmadinejad would get the election. But then, of course, we've had a tremendous amount of publicity saying that the vote was actually rigged and that we did not have fair elections over there. And, of course, the Iranian government is complaining that the American government is trying to influence the election process. Well, the question is that really true? And, of course, we know it's true because we know that the President Bush signed a directive, authorized $400 million, was to be used by the CIA to try to destabilize the government of Iran. And, of course, the CIA hired terrorists. They hired terrorists to go into Iran and kill people and blow up buildings and mosques and try to disrupt the country and try to get a revolution going in there. And they've been working for a number of years to destabilize the Iranian government. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that is an act of war. And if the Chinese or the Russians or the Mexicans or Hugo Chavez was to do that in the United States, it would be considered an act of war. And the question is, why isn't it considered an act of war when the United States government does that to Iran? In other words, right now we hear a tremendous amount of publicity. In fact, everything you will read in the newspapers, almost everything in the news magazines and see on television, says that that the government stole the election. But is that really true? Or actually, was it, of course, decided ahead of time that it didn't matter who won the election, we were going to try to destabilize the country? And, of course, you see these demonstrations, but who got all the people out in the streets? We don't see people demonstrating in the United States when elections are stolen, and elections are stolen here, but the people aren't out demonstrating. Somebody got the people out the streets demonstrating. Somebody painted the signs for them in English so that they could be held up, and people on the streets of Tehran carrying signs in English saying, "Who stole my vote?" And, of course, the thing is that most of the people couldn't even read the signs they were carrying. It was all for the impact on the American public. It is a prelude, I fear, to going to war with Iran. It's the sort of thing we did in the prelude to a World War II when we, of course, intended to go to war with Japan. And so I think we're going to war with Iran. But it all centers around, was the vote fair? Well, let's go to Brad Friedman, and let's talk about what goes on in the United States. Are our elections here fair and honest? Or is it that old adage, it doesn't matter how you vote, it's who counts the votes, it's important? Brad, thanks very much for being with us again.
My pleasure, Dr. Stan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I saw that program you put up on YouTube. I don't know how long you did it with the gentleman who wrote the program so they could rig the elections. He later ran for Congress, and they rigged the election against him.
Yeah,
that was an amazing DVD.
It's an extraordinary DVD. I'll point folks over to votinglies.com where you can get your own copy. It's a terrific documentary.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a minute with Brad Friedman right here at Radio Liberty. Well, go right ahead, Brad.
Yeah, I want to point folks over to VotingLies.com, where you can get a copy of that documentary. It's called Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, the Clint Curtis story, and recently won Best Documentary at the New Jersey Film Festival, so it's out there and it's doing well, but you might have to order your own copy to get to see it. It is a scary film, frankly, because it follows the story of the Florida computer programmer, Clint Curtis, who claims that he was asked by a sitting Republican congressman to create vote rigging software. And it tells that story that I've been investigating and reporting on for the past, about 5 years now. And it tells it all in depth, in full, for the first time. And it's pretty extraordinary and terrifying, frankly, because there are some dead folks in the middle of this. I won't say whether they were murdered or suicided, but it's pretty scary. So I want to recommend folks to go to VotingLies.com and check it out.
Now, of course, how long is the video? Is that just the one that's up on YouTube?
Yeah, I think what you saw on YouTube was probably a preview for the film, about 3 or 4 minutes, as I recall, the teaser. But the full-length film is about an hour, a little bit over an hour.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's something we would want to carry here at Radio Liberty. I think it's vitally important. And of course, Mr. Curtis, was a very, very, Clint Curtis was very, very courageous to come forward to testify before Congress. And I think really what's so disturbing is when he had solid evidence from a post-election polls that he had won the election, and he appealed to Congress to certainly not to sit his opponent, but to investigate, Congress refused to investigate the election, which was obviously fraudulent and obviously fixed.
Well, this is what we learn, I think, from that film, from his story, and from so much of the investigative work I've done over these past 4 or 5 years that plays into not just our elections, but into the Iranian election, as you referred as well. If you can't see the vote counting, if citizens cannot see their own votes counted, if votes are counted in secret, then what you end up with is what I call faith-based voting. In other words, you can cast your vote, but when the results come out, you have no idea if they are accurate or not. In truth, in Iran, we have no idea if the results were accurate or if they weren't. All we can do is speculate on all sides. Of the issue, and everybody has their reasons to believe that that the election was stolen. Other people have their reason to believe it wasn't stolen, but that it's, you know, as you suggested.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Mm-hmm. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Brad Friedman. We're talking about stealing elections, and Brad has been certainly on the front lines of this battle, trying to bring out the fact that our electronic voting machines were designed to be rigged, and of course he talks about a video which you will find at VoterLies.com. VoterLies.com.
Voting Lies.
Okay, VotingLies.com. And, of course, it goes into the fact that elections are stolen here in the United States, and the fact that you don't hear about this on the mass media is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. How often do you think this actually happens, Brett?
Well, again, as I say, we don't know. When you hide the evidence, and the evidence in this case, are the ballots, the actual votes. So when you're dealing with the touchscreen voting machine, there is no evidence. There are no ballots. At least when you have paper ballots, you've got evidence. The question is, will the people be allowed to see the evidence so that the people who are being governed, can know that the election is what they wanted, the results are what they actually asked for. We have the evidence of who won and who lost in Iran. We had the evidence of who won and who lost in Ohio, but the fight was to see that evidence. And right now, the votes were counted in secret in Iran, and the votes were counted in secret in Ohio. And, so that's what it all comes down to is transparency, is the citizens' ability to oversee their own elections. When you don't have that, you've got speculation.
Well,
I can't tell you how many, elections are stolen and how many aren't. All I know is that when we can't see it, we can't know, and I find that a grave danger.
Well, of course, you have the pre-election polls, which give you sort of an idea. Then you've got your post-election polls, you know, your exit polls.
Exit polls, right.
And, of course, we know that in Ohio, why the exit polls showed that John Kerry won. Now, in most of the other states, the exit polls were fairly accurate as far as the exit polls, so whether it was Bush or Kerry that won. But in Ohio, my understanding is that John Kerry carried the election. There was a serious question about what happened. In fact, many people were demanding a recount, and John Kerry, who had many, many millions of dollars left over, refused to challenge it. But was it the Libertarians and the Greens who paid for a re-election count, and then that was a fraudulent recount? What was the story there?
Your memory is very good on that. That's exactly right. There was the Greens and Libertarians who stood up and said, hey, let us count the votes. They filed for a recount. There's a law in Ohio that allows a 3% manual recount, and if there is inaccuracies found in that 3% manual count, then you're allowed to count the entire county. Well, a lot of the counties actually gamed that 3% count, including in Cuyahoga County, which is Cleveland, the largest county, and a couple of the election officials actually were sentenced to jail for having pre-picked the supposedly random 3% precincts that they were going to count. They pre-selected them, they pre-counted them the night before so that when they did the hand count would be sure to come out accurate. In other words, the entire thing was a charade. And by the way, it wasn't just Ohio. There was a number of other swing states where the results should have gone to Kerry according to the exit polls, but when the results counted in secret came out, sure enough, George Bush won. In the states where there weren't any real questions, the polls were, you know, pretty much just fine. But in those key swing states, that's where we had differences with the exit poll numbers.
And Brad, what is really so distressing is the average American has no idea of what you're talking about, because it is not certainly talked about by the media. It's not hammered at day after day after day by television. But we don't hear about this, you know, from Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, or from the people on the left. They just don't want to talk about us. They want us to think that our elections are fair, and I don't believe they are. I've seen example after example of fraudulent votes. In fact, we had one very, very close to where I live, and I think you probably know a little bit about the case. A friend of mine, Joan Paris, was running for state assembly. When she went to bed at night, she was leading in the Republican primary count 2-1. When she woke up in the morning, she was behind 2-1. The man who ran the vote in Monterey, I think you talked to him, he said, when asked about the voting, he said, you just got to trust us. You know, you have to trust our integrity. And then very shortly thereafter, they found out that he was a crook. He was using his credit card to run up $70,000 of debt that was to be paid for the county for his own personal finances and pleasure, he said, was because he wanted to help his invalided mother. That was the excuse, and he got off with a slap on the wrist. And 43 criminal counts and a slap on the wrist. And this was the man who ran that vote, and he said, and didn't you talk to him, and didn't he tell you had to trust him?
Yes, he said, quote, Brad, to a certain extent you have to have faith and trust in your election officials. And in that case, this would be me. I was speaking to him, interviewing him on the air, actually, and asking him about their new touchscreen voting machines, which they were just bringing into Monterey County at the time. And he was demonstrating on the radio how they're supposed to work. And, of course, I was asking questions that, frankly, he couldn't answer. And he said, well, you know, you're just going to have to trust me in the end. And, of course, I say, no, sir, we don't have to trust you. Our system is not built on trust. It's built on checks and balances and nothing personal, but the best election officials in the country will tell you, don't trust me. There is no reason to trust me. If you can't see the evidence, then you can't rely on what is being reported. So that is the danger here, where electronics begin to hide the ballots, and of course this has been happening for years. You know, when you have elections counted in secret, then the people just have to presume that the results are correct. It was pretty amazing after the Iranian election a week or so ago, New York Times came out with an editorial blasting Iran, you know, for their secret vote counting and for these results that seem to be obviously fraudulent, et cetera, et cetera. And I actually had a reader at bradblog.com who replaced Ahmadinejad in the Times article, replaced Ahmadinejad with Bush, and, you know, basically just replaced the key words. And the New York Times, who was silent after the 2004 election, even worse than silent, they actually, you know, claimed that any questions about the results were, you know, just conspiracy theories and nonsense. So they have questions about the Iran election, but they don't seem to give a damn very much about our own elections in this country and the problems that we've seen over and over and over in one election after another. And it's getting, as I see it, worse and worse. More people are asking more questions about the results. It's actually good, I think, that they're asking questions. But the reason that they have to, that's the problem. And the reason is because we count in secret. The transparency has been taken away, and the people's attempt to oversee their own elections, you know, is for naught. When there's questions, there's no way to figure it out because the people aren't allowed to see the ballots.
Well, now, what's happened here in California? We know that the Secretary of State, the Democratic Secretary of State, questioned the reliability of the voting machines, and she was going to actually decertify many of these voting machines after we spent, I don't know how many hundreds or millions of dollars to buy them. But where do we stand in California? Where do we stand across the country as far as getting rid of these electronic voting machines, which can be so easily rigged?
Well, we are slowly improving here in California. Deborah Bowen, the new Secretary of State you mentioned, well, she was new in 2006. She came in. She did a top-to-bottom study of all the electronic voting systems in the state, found that every single one of them was hackable within about 60 seconds. So what she ended up doing was decertifying almost all of the touchscreen systems. And those are systems that essentially, there is no paper ballot at all. It's, you know, completely impossible for any voter to ever verify that their vote was counted correctly. So for the most part, we now have paper ballots in this state. That's good, except for the fact that they're then counted by electronic op-scan machines instead of by people, instead of by human beings, which means, once again, we have to rely on these computer programs to tell us what the results are. And this, there was a very a serious problem that happened after the November election up in Humboldt County, where a citizens' transparency group was allowed to count the ballots that had been counted by the Diebold op scanner. They were able to take those ballots and count them themselves with a different system. And what did they find? But Diebold had been deleting hundreds of ballots without notifying the system administrator. The ballots just disappeared. This led Secretary of State Deborah Bowen once again to investigate what was going on. She ended up decertifying that particular op-scan model made by Diebold, but she has allowed other Diebold op-scan machines to continue, even though problems have also been found where ballots can be deleted without notice. So that's California. The rest of the country, state by state, it's different everywhere. Folks, election integrity folks have been slowly making the case that we need to get rid of these touchscreens. But the question about the paper ballots and the op-scan still remain. There is House legislation in the House that is pending. It's imperfect. It may help a little bit by just banning touchscreen voting machines out and out.
Well, I think what we have to do, of course, is get back to paper ballots, count them in the local precinct, and then recount them again at the state, at the in the county. But they have to be counted someplace where we can actually look over their shoulders and make sure it's not fraudulent. You know, Cindy, if you don't have honest voting, you don't have honest government. And of course, Well, it's getting, we're all getting more and more like Chicago, where the old slogan was, you know, vote early and vote often, and then come in for your pay afterwards. We'll be right back. Well, is there any sense in Congress, you know, of the fraudulent nature of what's going on? Are they really concerned? Are they more concerned?
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verky water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verky water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
If they know you're watching, they're going to be much more cautious. We remember those, when the vote counts were carried out in Florida, I guess that was in 2000 when George Bush was running against Al Gore, and they wouldn't let anybody in to see them counting the votes. That was when we had the hanging Chad controversy.
Well, actually, what they didn't want people to do was to count those ballots. And in 2000, what they tried to do is stop people from counting them because they knew if they counted them, they would have found that Al Gore won. And it actually was a fairly transparent process. Now, the problem was that when people think about hand-counting ballots, they think about 2000 when you had all of those ballots, you know, from the entire county in each of Florida's county, you know, sent back to the headquarters into one place, and then you've got a counting nightmare because you've got millions and millions of ballots. What we're talking about, the transparency that we're talking about, is counting them on election night at the precinct after the polls closed with everybody watching. And if you do it at the precinct, there's not all that many ballots to count, and the counting is now decentralized and, you know, 100% transparent for anybody who wants to watch, such that it becomes very difficult to game the election that way. You earlier you referred to Chicago and the old Mayor Daley days, and again, there they were counting in secret, and they were bringing all the ballots back to one place, counting them or not counting them and announcing the numbers to be whatever they wanted. That's when trouble happens. That's why you want to count them immediately at the precinct, post those results publicly, and that makes it very, very difficult to get away with stealing an election. And it's very low tech and inexpensive.
And, of course, then, of course, you can always check your count with the one that the county does on those same ballots when they, of course, look at, they count the ballots from each precinct. They should do that separately. And then there's a double check on it. So this is the way it worked. It worked very well for many years. And then, of course, oh, we had to be high tech. The American people had to know within 2 or 3 hours who'd won the election. We've got to do it all electronically. And, of course, I think that that whole scenario of the hanging chad was simply to justify bringing in the electronic voting machines, and whether they intentionally wanted to game the elections, we will never know what their intent was, but we do know a massive propaganda campaign, hanging chads, hanging chads, hanging chads. We've got to have another solution. We got one, and it's been a nightmare ever since then.
It certainly appears that way, because the company that made those ballots, which appear to have been faulty and having problems with their chads, 7 whistleblowers from that company, Sequoia, from 2000, said that they were instructed to use bad paper on the ballots and to misalign the chads. Now, at the same time, Sequoia voting system was the first company that actually had a touchscreen voting machine good to go. It was all in use already in 2000 across Riverside County. So they benefited big time from those so-called hanging chads. And that, you're right, that's how we got into this mess. I'll correct you on one point, though. The speed that people talk about, that the media wants those numbers immediately, that's true. But in fact, if you're talking about counting just a few hundred ballots at each precinct, it doesn't take that long. You can still have quick results and have hand counting if you do it properly.
I'm sure you can. Of course, you've got to guard those votes from the precinct, that they should be taken down very, very carefully. You can't just have it show somebody throw the votes in the back of their car and take it down to the local courthouse. You've got to have those votes under guard, because there is so much at stake in our elections that there is a real incentive to actually falsify the elections. And
yes, there sure is. And that's why you have as many eyeballs as possible watching every step. You know, we have, everybody has a video camera now on their phone, you know, at their home. If there's nothing to hide, then there's nothing to hide. Let all the counting happen in public. Let anybody who wants to videotape the entire process videotape it. And I suspect it will be done quickly. It'll be done accurately. And we won't have these constant questions that we have cropping up after each and every election, as we see these days.
There was a gentleman, I think his vote was Vote Scam, as I remember. Do you know who I'm speaking of? There were two brothers that came to Santa Cruz, and they borrowed some of our video cameras and went down to film the elections here in Santa Cruz.
Years ago, and all of a sudden I'm forgetting their names.
But one of them died under, well, rather mysterious circumstances.
They were on this rather early.
Right,
they were. Right, transparency.
And of course, they were saying that the votes were rigged. I didn't believe it at the time, but, I've come to change my views.
Good for you.
God bless America, land that I love.
program. This is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Brad Friedman. We're talking about the what's happening in elections, and certainly it sounds like we're making some progress here in California. It sounds like they're making some progress across the country, and there is some legislation, but of course it sounds like, of course, nothing's going to really be done until the year 2014. Well, is there? Do you think there's a growing awareness across America of this very real problem?
Yeah, there definitely is, and that, frankly, is no thanks to the corporate media. It's really thanks to the citizen-led media, the bloggers and so forth, and the citizens on the ground who are, you know, like I said, are actually following, you know, going to their county elections and watching what's going on, videotaping what's going on, getting the word out via YouTube. That's what's making the difference. And so I think the people get it. The people are way ahead of both the media and the politicians on this one. And that's why you get so many people yelling and screaming, you know, how could we not have done something about this problem by now? Well, we haven't, except in, excuse me, in, you know, certain states, certain counties, where the citizens have stepped up and made enough noise that they've made a difference. But for every one step forward, it seems we sometimes take two steps back. There are now people who are pushing for internet voting, believe it or not, as if the process, you know, wasn't already untransparent enough. Now they want to move all the voting to the internet, Dr. Stan. And it just makes my head want to explode. What must these people be thinking? So they're doing, you know, they want to bring in internet voting. They want to bring in vote by mail for everybody, which, again, you have a paper ballot, that's good, but as soon as you drop it in the post office box, it's gone. It's in a black hole, and you have no idea whether it's being counted accurately or even counted at all. You know, the political parties, they love the vote by mail because it's much easier for them to track and to, you know, do their get-out-the-vote operations. But when it comes to the people and the voters and the transparency, again, it's all slipping away. So we've got it's like whack-a-mole sometimes doing this, Dr. Stan. You know, fighting against vote by mail, fighting against internet voting, and once again we're hearing the same sort of propaganda about internet voting that we heard about the electronic voting machines in the first place. You know, oh, it's the future. You can't stop progress. It all has to be done on the internet. Well, you know, when you've got computer scientists and security experts warning that the internet is not secure for something like voting, then it would be nice if people listened. But I'm afraid there's, you know, companies.
Hold the thought. Hold the thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Brad Friedman. Our telephone number, if you'd like to talk to Brad, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Brad is on the front lines of this whole voting scam issue. And I think it is a voting scam. In many places, you cannot trust the votes. Believe me, the old adage is it doesn't really matter how people vote. It's who counts the votes that's important. And as you begin looking at this, and Brad, I'm sure, can give you example after example of how they have gamed the voting system here in America. Over in Iran, people are up in arms here in America. People really can't believe this could be going on, and our job is to make them know that it is. Now, again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Brad, how can people get to your website, get your regular emails, as I do, always informative about what's really going on?
Thank you. And by the way, that's the Collier Brothers. The name had escaped me before, but they're the folks who, well, boy, 10, 20 years ago had been writing about this stuff in Vote Scam. Folks can come to bradblog.com, where I report on all of the election fraud concerns and much more. And as you know, for your readers, we have a media list that I send out alerts to, but if your readers want to contact me, send and get on that list, send a note to brad@bradblog.com and put in all capital letters in the subject line, add me to the list, and I'll add you to the media list.
And believe me, it's fascinating information. It really keeps you abreast of what's really going on in this subject. And this is vitally important, because if we do not have honest elections, we will not have honest government. And we need to actually be involved. And here's a place we really can be involved. And we can insist that we, at least at our local community, we have honest elections. And remember, you cannot trust anybody. They may have a nice smile, or they may assure you everything's honest, but of course trust them, but always check as well. So Ronald Reagan had some sort of a remark, I've forgotten, a trust but verify, I think that was the way he put it, and I think that's what we really have to do as far as the elections are concerned.
Yeah, and you know, you will get information at BradBlog and via my alerts that you really won't get elsewhere, and I'll give you, you know, a case in point. All for the last Lord knows how many months, certainly over the election period in 2008, you heard all of the cable stations, but particularly Fox News, and you still hear them now, talking about Acorn, Acorn, Acorn. Well, the fact of the matter is, there is no Acorn voter fraud. There's not a single instance of Acorn having committed voter fraud. There is a handful of their workers who did commit voter registration fraud, and that is important, but the reason we even know about it is because Acorn themselves turned in those workers who were defrauding them. And the thanks that they got is, you know, Fox News runs around and says Acorn's committing voter fraud. It's all stuff and nonsense. Yet at the same time, just last week, the head of the firm hired here in California by the Republican Party to do voter registration pled guilty himself to voter registration fraud. Now, I was on Fox News just before the election last year, when they were going round the clock about Acorn and all of that nonsense, and the day I was appearing on Fox, just minutes before, the news broke about this guy being arrested, the head of the Republican firm that was doing voter registration, and I broke that news on the air in my own Fox News alert. I suspect they wouldn't have even run anything on that had I not been there to force it on the air, because I happened to be appearing live that day. Since he pled guilty last week, I have seen absolutely nothing on Fox News about it, yet I see them going on and on, Bill O'Reilly, Glenn Beck, going on and on about this Acorn nonsense, for which there is no evidence that Acorn has committed any crimes. So, you know, if you want to find out the real news, what's really going on, sometimes you have to go to the alternative media, places like bradblog.com. I'll give you not just what's going on, but, you know, evidence to prove it, police reports and so forth. So, yeah, when this fella, Mark Anthony Jacoby, pled guilty last week, he pled guilty to some of the lesser charges. His firm, called the Young Political Majors, or YPM, has been alleged to have actually changed the registration of some 70,000 ballots here in California from Democratic to Republican, so that when Democrats went in to vote in the primary last year, they weren't able to cast a vote because they weren't signed up as Democrats anymore. They actually had their votes stolen from them before they went to vote. That's the real story. The Acorn voter fraud hoax is, I'm sorry to say, a GOP hoax, and it's meant to keep people from casting a legal vote.
Well, now tell me how this worked. So were these people who were signed up by, certainly by, you know, people gathering petitions, actually people going out and gathering signatures for voter registration, and certainly putting them in as Republicans when they should have been Democrats? How did they actually switch the votes?
That's exactly right. They would put in Republicans for them, and in some cases, the voters didn't even know that they were changing their voter registration at all. They were voters who were already registered, and they were asking these people, oh, would you like to sign this petition for a child's cancer hospital, or to stop child molesters, or something like that? And they would, you know, sign that petition, and then they would say, okay, sign here. And they would flip the page up, and they would get their signature on a second page. Well, after the voters left at that point, what they actually had signed was a voter registration change form, and they would change their registrations from Democratic to Republican because they were only paying them for registering Republican voters. And they were paying them something like $7 to $12 for every Republican voter that they were able to sign up. Mind you, with the Acorn registrations, and they had registered something like 2 million voters in this last cycle, you know, they'll register anybody, Democratic, Republican, Independent, it doesn't matter. They're just trying to sign people up to vote, but they happen to go out to the low and middle income areas to sign people up, and those people tend to vote overwhelmingly Democratic, and that's why you've got this propaganda campaign against Acorn to try to knock them out of business, because frankly, they're extremely effective at signing up voters and spreading democracy, exactly the thing you would think that these Republicans would be in favor of.
Well, I fear that it's all about power, political power, and certainly we should never compromise our principles to obtain that power. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you're out there and the listening across America. Give us a call if you have a question for Brad. He's on the front lines of this battle, and he's probably done more to dramatize what's going on than anybody, going back to the time of the Collier brothers, who actually one of them died under as I remember, under rather mysterious circumstances, and I don't know what the other one's doing, but they wrote a book called, I believe it was called Vote Scam, and it must have been 20 years ago when they were here in my community, and certainly looking into the electoral process here in Santa Cruz. So certainly what we need is more people in every community involved in the electoral process, because this is the very foundation of selecting our elected representatives. And whether you like the system or not, if we don't have honest men in Congress, why, there's little hope for the preservation of our society. Well, certainly the way things are looking now, it looks like, though, the Republicans probably will sweep Congress next year. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I'm not in the business of predictions because they always come out wrong. I don't think Republicans are going to necessarily do particularly well next year. We'll see if they do or not. You know, I think support for Obama is slipping in no small part because Democrats are, you know, becoming disillusioned. He promised a lot of change that unfortunately he has yet to deliver on. He's trying to thread the needle, I think, and go right down the middle where he can, but I think he's upsetting folks on all sides in the bargain. So it may serve him well. I'm not so sure that it serves Democrats well or that it serves Republicans well in the end. So, boy, I couldn't take a guess on what's going to happen. I think we're a long way away from those 2010 elections, and a lot can go on, I think, between now and then, both good and bad for Barack Obama and for the Democrats.
Well, I'm sure that it is the case. Certainly, things are not good economically. Why you usually want to get rid of the people in power. Certainly, we saw that, I think, the tremendous backlash against the Republican Party simply because of George Bush was his position on the war, his position on torture, and he was the man who was in charge when the economy collapsed, and I think people wanted to change. And, well, I think that they had hoped and prayed we were going to get a change, and that change is not really coming through. The economy is getting worse. Well, it's going to be a fascinating year between now and then, but the thing is, we will have elections next year, but we want to have honest elections. And so what would you tell our people that they should do? You mentioned that they ought to volunteer to become a poll watcher. They get paid for the day, don't they? What do they get paid?
Yeah, not enough. For all the money that we're spending on these terrible electronic voting systems that don't work, if we gave them to people instead, it would be a lot better. And getting involved in that process, yeah, man, by the way, 2010, a very important election because it's these elections that are going to help determine the census. And all of the states around the country are going to be reapportioning in 2010. So very important elections in 2010, even though it's not a presidential election year. But, yeah, people have to understand they need to get involved with their democracy. It's not something that you just do, you know, once every 4 years. Go and cast a vote, and most people don't even do that much, but go and cast a vote and then sit at home and wait for the results. You need to be a part of it. You need to, you know, if you care about the Constitution, That's a little section that says, of government, of the people, by the people, and for the people. Then the people need to participate. And I know that election officials all across the country are always looking for folks to help. They're always looking for poll workers. And if we could get more involved in our democracy, even if it's, you know, just for a couple of days each year to help that process along, I think ultimately we will all be much better off for it rather than, you know, allowing it to election officials and, frankly, voting machine companies to handle everything. We have to make it clear that we are here, that we care, and that we are going to, you know, do something about our democracy to make sure everyone can vote and to fight like hell to make sure that every ballot is counted and counted accurately.
Well, of course, during one of the breaks there, Brad was talking about a gentleman named Clint Curtis. And Clint, correct me if I'm wrong, but this gentleman was a software programmer, and he was employed to write a program that would simply allow the voting machines to do to actually elect somebody who wasn't elected and to defeat somebody who was. In other words, to game the voting machines. He voted. He thought it was going to be used by the Republicans, the fellow who told him to do it, you know, so that they could prevent the gaming of the elections. He didn't realize this was being used in Florida to actually elect people who were not selected by the people. Well, so why don't you tell that story again? Because our listeners, many of them did not hear that when you mentioned it before. Tell the story, certainly, of Clint Curtis.
Sure. It's an extraordinary story, and Clint, I should point out, was at the time a Republican, a lifelong Republican, who was working at this computer firm. And he was asked by a congressman, Tom Feeney, who I'm happy to say finally lost his election in 2008. He's no longer in Congress. He is, however, still under investigation, the FBI, for his dealings with Jack Abramoff, the Republican lobbyist who's now in jail. But he was asked, he asked Clint way back when, to create vote rigging software. He claimed at the time it was to keep those pesky Democrats from being able to steal elections on touchscreen machines. But when Clint turned in this really a demonstration program of how you might do it, he was told by his boss, oh, you don't understand. This is meant to rig the vote in South Florida. And at that point, obviously he became concerned and he tried to let folks know about this. And he eventually filed an affidavit, and he testified to Congress. And the fellow that he originally told about it, a man by the name of Ray Lemmy, who was an inspector general in the state of Florida, had told Clint that his report on this matter was almost complete and that he was going to be very happy with the results. And then 2 weeks later, Ray Lemmy ended up dead in a Valdosta, Georgia hotel room under very troubling and suspicious circumstances. That story, my reporting on it for 4 or 5 years, trying to get the word out about this, is all told in a new documentary film called Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, which you can get at votinglies.com. That's votinglies.com, and it's a hell of a scary story, but it's an object lesson in just the dangers of allowing our votes to be counted by electronic machines. You know, we had recently in Clay County, Kentucky, six election officials were arrested for gaming elections since the 2002 cycle. And it was actually both Democrats and Republicans alike were arrested down there. We had a circuit court judge, the county clerk, the school superintendent, all of these folks who were on the election, on the board of election down there in Clay County, Kentucky. So, you know, this goes back to, Stan, you had mentioned our friend Tony Anchundo in Monterey County, the election official who was arrested there. Again, the threat is not from this so-called voter fraud and, you know, somebody voting twice and so forth. The real threat is when you have folks on the inside who can change the results to anything they want. A single person could flip an entire election without being detected. That's what Clint Curtis shows us in his story, at votinglies.com. And that's what we saw happening down there in Clay County, Kentucky, where you actually had election officials who were going in after voters had voted on these touchscreen machines and actually changing their vote after they left the booth. And they had no idea what was going on. So it's an incredible story. And like I said, six election officials were arrested. One of them pled guilty a couple weeks ago. The other five will be standing trial in a few months.
And these are the things you're not hearing about on the major news. You're not hearing about it on Fox. You're not hearing it about on the left-wing news. You have to understand Fox, I personally believe, is simply there to give you the impression you're going to hear both sides. And the reality is you're not going to hear both sides. And that's why we talk to Brad and try to get him on as often as we can. I've been a little negligent in having him on. He always keeps us abreast of the latest things that are happening. And we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. Brad, hang on. Don't hang up just yet. But, of course, our guest has been Brad Friedman on the front lines of this battle to maintain the integrity of voting. Brad, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program, and that'll let you.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a 1-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value, plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
As soon as we can get our hands on it, we want you to have the information. We want you to know that they really do game elections in the United States. What's happening over, of course, in Iran is an effort to destabilize the government. And do they rig elections throughout the world? Absolutely. They rigged the election in South Africa when they put Nelson Mandela in power. They printed 80 million votes, and they only had 40 million voters, and they threw out the votes. It didn't go the way they wanted. And the United States announced to the who had won the election long before the count was completed. Of course, this recent count, a recent election of a member of the Communist Party there in South Africa, was a fraudulent election as well. There are fraudulent elections all over the world. Because, of course, when there's power there, why, it's going to be sought after. This is why our founding fathers created a republic, so even if you had totally corrupt people in government, they could not do any harm. And, of course, what we really need is moral people in government who will do what is right. This is why you need to get some of our information on the founding documents of our nation that we have put together by Chuck Baldwin, and has all of the founding documents. Why you need to read the book Betrayed by the Bench by a good friend, John Stormer, who will actually, I think, be our guest tomorrow or sometime. That's Betrayed by the Bench, going into the Supreme Court and the betrayal of the foundation of our freedom. We have a 4-tape set on the foundation of our freedom, and these are all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. To understand what's really going on in America today, let me suggest the Secret Mystery Series. It's a series of 3 DVDs put out by our friend Chris Pinto. And the first one is The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, going to the fact that there were secret societies here when America was founded. They were the Rosicrucians. And then, of course, the second DVD, Riddles in Stone, going into the occult symbology in the architecture of Washington, D.C. It was laid out with a pentagram right in the very heart of it. It was laid out in alignment with the stars because there was this belief that America was become the new Atlantis. The initial emblem on the back of our dollar bill was a phoenix, not the eagle. It was a phoenix, and if you want the documentation, we have it. The phoenix, of course, was a mythical bird that of course, died and was burned and then rose again from the ashes. And America is to rise again from the ashes and create the new Atlantis. The Atlantis of old was destroyed. You need to hear the talk given by Chris Pinto. It's called The New Atlantis. So there's a Secret Mystery series of DVDs. We recommend them to you. Get them together at a special price or get them separately. It doesn't matter. And then, of course, you want to get the DVD, the New Atlantis, of course, and Chris Pinto's talk. And then, of course, you want to get Constance Cumby's talk, The Emergence, because, of course, going along with the idea of a new world order and a new world religion is a new world leader. And he is going to be the one who is going to be emerging. And, of course, you need to understand there really are millions of Americans who worship a different God. And at the recent conspiracy conference, the last question came to the podium, addressed the question to me while I was sitting on the panel there, and said, have you ever stopped and thought you worshiped the wrong God? Look at the mess your God has made out of what's going on. And I thanked him profusely for making the remark and for introducing the concept that there is another God that so many people worship. And I thanked him, and I said, you know, some people may want to worship Lucifer, and there really are millions of people, and I'm so glad you brought this out, so the people in this audience can understand the true nature of the spiritual battle that's going on today. And the poor young man naturally ran out of the hall. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're involved in a spiritual battle. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.